Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. With us this week is Tim Cremer, Executive Director of the New York State School Boards Association, which provides advocacy, training, and information to school boards in support of their mission to govern the state's public schools and represents more than 650 school boards and more than 5,000 school board members in New York. Welcome our old friend and often correspondent on this program, Tim Cremer.
Nice to be here. Thank you for having me on.
You're looking more and more distinguished as you get a little bit older. For those of you, we knew you when you had black hair.
It has changed. It has gone gray on me. You're right.
You're distinguished.
I like that.
Yeah, yeah. And you have a mustache that makes you look a little like Teddy Roosevelt. There's that.
I'm working that. Yeah. Working that hard.
Yeah, so thanks for being with us. We just had the school budget votes around New York State. How'd they fare?
They did quite well. I don't know if this is a record. I'll find out later today, but 98.4% of the school budgets that were proposed passed. Only 11 defeats statewide, so that's an amazing number.
There were reasons, weren't there, that they passed. Some of it had to do with tax caps, and it's a little bit complicated. Perhaps you could explain all of that.
It gets a little complicated, but the fact of the matter is that the levies were low. On average, they were only 1.9% tax levy increase, which is just below that magic 2% that has been purported to be the cap. We all know that every school district has its own individual calculation, but 1.98%. The spending increases.
Stop right there, Tim,
okay.
Because some of us don't understand some of the language.
Okay.
The governor comes in and he puts in, with the legislature's approval, one of his first things is a 2% cap on how much they can raise, right, your taxes. And if you want to do it, you can do it, but then you got to go back to the voters, you got to find all kinds of stuff. So everybody kept within that 2% is what you're saying.
Most districts did.
Most districts
did. There were 23 that attempted to go beyond their tax levy cap or their tax levy limit.
And then what happened?
It looks like 8 of them were defeated of the 23,
yeah.
As I'm looking at. And those districts, all of these 11 that were defeated, will have an opportunity in June to go back to the voters for a second try. My guess is that most of them will attempt to bring their new levy underneath the cap and hopefully be successful.
Look, we all know that there's a reality, and there are some school districts which are as good as any independent or private school in the country. You get a place like Scarsdale, for example, and they pay their teachers extraordinarily well, and people move in order to give their kids, superior educations and move out so they don't have to pay the taxes, some of them later on. So those are the districts, I suspect, who are going to have the hardest time with this stuff.
Well, they are highly dependent upon what they can raise locally because they don't get a whole lot in the form of state aid.
Right.
Most school districts are highly dependent upon state aid and use that to supplement their costs, to offset what they have to raise locally. But a place like Scarsdale and some of these high or what we call low need school districts, high wealth districts, they are pretty dependent upon what they can raise locally, and yet they too are finding that they need to stay at or below the cap in most cases because their taxpayers, as wealthy as they may be, it's not universal, and some of them are simply tapped out.
So some of them may want to pay their teachers better than other places. I remember back in the day, years ago, when somebody told me the average salary was $100,000 in Scarsdale, whether or not that's sustainable, if you're going to say you can't raise taxes more than 2%, the levy, as you say, I always thought of that as dirt. But how much can you raise salaries if you're under that 2%?
You're not going to raise them a lot. You're going to go back to the bargaining table and you're going to renegotiate a contract, and it might not include a whole lot in new money on the salary line. There will be a step increase that is typically a part of a salary, automatic salary increase year to year. There are movements across a salary grid if you get additional graduate credits or get a master's degree or a doctorate or something like that. There could be supplemental contracts you get if you take on additional responsibilities. But we're going through an era of education reform that I think is going to transform a lot of that. You're going to see a lot more of sharing of services, You're going to see a lot more.
We hear about that all the time, Tim Cramer, yeah. But, you know, so far we don't see much.
I think you're going to start seeing a lot more
of it. Because they have to.
They have to.
It's interesting because Andrew's father, Mario, we will remember, was proposing all that stuff. Very little happened, combination of districts and things. And now we see the son, you know, basically with this 2% business, putting tremendous pressure of the same kind to do it.
Well, he took it to another level this year. It was 2% property tax cap's been in place for 2 years, but then we now have this thing called a tax freeze plan. That means that there will be a rebate on these property tax increases for the next 2 years, which was a big reason why these passed at such a high level. But beyond those 2 years, school districts have to combine together, municipalities, counties, et cetera, and find out ways in which they can lower their tax levies, lower their taxes. In the aggregate, 1% in 2017, another 1% in 2018, another 1% in 2019.
And if they do that, then when you say rebate, what does that mean?
A rebate is this year your tax levy generates taxes on you at equal X. This coming year, assuming your school district stayed at or below the property tax cap that was established for them, and most did, of course, you as a property taxpayer in that school district have a slight increase in your taxes. They probably kept that levy down pretty tight, but that increase will be picked up by the state in the form of a rebate check that'll be coming to you this fall.
Okay, let me change to the next thing. School boards have had their hands full with charter schools, Tim Cramer, and you're the head of the school board, you know, association. How goes that bloody battle?
It's still not exactly a love fest. There are probably, I'm going to say, 20 communities in New York that are facing charter schools, have to coexist, if you will. The vast majority of them are in New York City.
Right.
And then you have Albany and Buffalo and a few in Rochester and a few in Syracuse and here and there. They will have the potential to grow because the cap that is established for the number of charter schools that can be set forth in the state is not anywhere close. We have much more room to grow, if you will. And there have been interest expressed from charter school operators in having new charter schools open in places that would be a little bit unusual, kind of out in the country, in the suburbs, places that typically have been very proud of their local school, traditional school districts, and not have felt that competition from a charter school. Most of the charter schools' applications have not gone very far because there has not been local support for it.
And if the community doesn't support it, you know, then what can they do to stop it?
They can certainly communicate to the chartering agency. It might be the SUNY Charter School Institute. It might be the Board of Regents. If it's in New York City, it could be the Department of Education to express that you are opposed to this. And that opposition is taken into account. You do know, though, that in this case, there's a lot of money that is moving towards the charter schools this year because of efforts by Mayor de Blasio down in New York City, who first expressed kind of his disdain for charter schools.
Right.
And that simply prompted the governor to respond in a take this on as an issue where it had not been an issue at the beginning of the budget cycle. And now we have commitments in New York City to provide facilities for charter schools, additional aid for charter schools, and that kind of policy and resources are going to be made available to charter schools statewide as well.
And of course, it should be pointed out that there's some of the people who have sponsored these charter schools are quite wealthy, and some of the private citizens, and also make contributions to the governor. I think I should say that. I see you're not going to even nod your head or blink an eyelash.
I don't view the charter schools as the enemy. And in fact, we need to do a better job of bringing these traditional charter school supporters and traditional education supporters together to share what's working, what's not working on behalf of the kids. We don't do a very good job.
But it still costs the school boards some money to have a charter school inject itself into a community, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
And we're dealing with very little money to begin with.
Well, that's right.
So if you have a charter school, then that's less money to give to the public schools, isn't it?
That is correct.
All right. Let's go to Common Core. Everybody said Common Core, Common Core. Bad, bad. Rollout bad. Didn't do it well. The unions are furious. What about the school boards?
You know, I can speak for the people whom I represent, and we are supporters of the Common Core. We do not believe in a moratorium.
Now, the Common Core, let's just get this straight, Tim. Right. The Common Core is a series of goals, basically,
right,
that have been established nationwide, right, and New York signed on to it in order to get the money. And then when they did, there was hell to pay.
That's a good shortcut explanation with a few gaps in between. There, the Common Core learning standards have been adopted by 45 states, New York being one of them. Those were standards that were created by the Association, the National Governors Association, and a Council of Chief State School Officers came together and formulated these standards. We signed on, and because we signed on, we then had the opportunity to become eligible for some other funding opportunities, such as Race to the Top funds that came our way.
Get the money.
To help implement the Common Core Learning Standards.
Get the money.
Get the money. There are also, however, linked to the Common Core Learning Standards are the significance of having new curriculum in place, professional development for teachers, testing regimens, annual performance evaluations of teachers and principals that have a link to student achievement on Common Core aligned tests. All of that is a very complicated system. Most states have kind of rolled this out in a very methodical sort of way. Here in New York, we took the whole thing and did it all at once. We said standards, curriculum, testing, evaluation, everything. We're going to be first and foremost because we got our money. And unfortunately, it has caused an awful lot of anxiety and opposition. We need to kind of undo this mess, redo it right, and we're in the process of making those repairs right now. And I think we will get this right before
like a
too
second
long.
Operation to reset the bones.
That's right. That's what we need to do.
I get it. Now, the school boards, you say, are for the goals, meeting these goals, which everybody should be.
We have to be. We have so many kids that are leaving our public schools who are not college and career ready. We have all kinds of data that shows that. They're in need of remediation, be it whether they go to college, whether they go into a career. So many of them go into either a two-year college or a four-year college. They don't make it. They don't ever graduate. There's a real problem here. And so, we have to think of their future, not ours. We really have to figure out a way which we are preparing these kids during this foundational stage from pre-K through 12, preparing them for whatever awaits them in life. And if we haven't done that, we have failed in our mission. So I don't have an alternative to the Common Core. We must embrace this.
Talk to me about pre-K. There was so much talk. De Blasio gets elected mayor in New York. Pre-K, pre-K, pre-K. The governor blinks and he says, okay, we're not going to tax the rich in order to support pre-K, but I'll give you the money. We'll give you the money for the pre-K in New York City. But what about the rest of the state?
Well, there was $300 million that was set aside for New York City and $40 million set aside for the rest of the state.
Well, considering that half the state lives in New York City and half the state lives outside of New York City, right? In terms
not
of population.
Quite sure it boils down to that. It might
pretty,
be.
Pretty close.
But I don't know if the student population is quite that way.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yes.
Yeah, well, that's interesting.
And I don't know about the pre-K population. What I could tell you is that there's been a little pushback as to how come the split was the way it was. But honestly, the governor said quite openly, he said, look, you come forward with your proposals on opening up these pre-K programs, the money will be there. Now, it's being made available on a reimbursement basis and only to 25%.
First, you got to spend it, and then you
get it back.
You got
to spend it to get it, and that's causing a little bit of anxiety. But more importantly, most of the districts I represent have said, well, wait a minute. We're having enough time funding K through 12, and kindergarten's not even mandatory, let alone opening up a whole pre-K program with its attendant facility needs, transportation needs, staffing needs and such. We're not so sure we're ready to go there yet. And the governor's saying, well, okay, if you're not ready to go there yet, let me know when you are and the funding will be there eventually. It's a little bit of, okay.
You're awfully nice to the governor. Are you afraid of him?
I have to acknowledge the fact that we have gotten additional state aid since he's becoming governor. He has held forth on some things that we believe in. And certainly there have been times when we have disagreed with him and made those disagreements clear.
Mm. So, you know, school boards are incredibly political. A lot of people, it's their first step into running for public office. And so we get some people, state senators, Congress people, others who run for the school board. And I've often wondered, do they run for the school board because it's the place that you learn your craft as a politician, or do they run for the school board in order to help children?
I think it's the latter. My sense is
of course you're going to say that.
Of course I'm going to say that, but I do believe it. I do believe that the people who run for the school board are typically not career politicians. There's a few of them, certainly, that have gone forth from the school board and moved on to higher office. Rob Astorino.
He's running for governor right now.
Comptroller DiNapoli.
Yeah, wonderful man from
Senator DeFrancisco. Locally, we have Senator Kapchak, Assemblywoman Fahey. Those are just some of the people who come to mind, and there's many others. But I would tell you that I think they started their careers thinking, this is the start and stop of my political career. They might not even think of it as being politically motivated when they run for the school board. But eventually they find themselves wanting to perhaps do more and having opportunities made available to them.
If John McLaughlin were here, he'd say, wrong. Anyway, that's a nice face on it. By the way, I loved what you said just a little while ago about you have to spend the money and then they'll give it back to you. And this is what creates a certain thing we call cash flow problems for a school board, doesn't it?
In other words,
you've got to advance the money and then you got to hope that the money will come in a timely fashion back. But in the meantime, you got to find that money to spend.
Well, that's been actually one of the bigger controversies for a lot of the state aid programs that have come online where they're competitive grants. And you would think this would be money that we would want to pursue. But you have to wonder, is that money going to be available to us in year number 2, 3, 4? We're going to make a huge investment early on, and can we sustain that? And that's always been a stopping point on some of us who are willing to pursue those opportunities.
So let's have fun. Commissioner King, who is sitting at that very microphone you're sitting at now, the State Ed Commissioner, a very impressive fellow, has gotten himself, of course, into a very difficult job. It is a tough job because you have to satisfy constituencies, many different constituencies. You're giving me that look again. Where are you going with this? So how do the school boards feel about Commissioner King?
I admire him. I think he's one of the best commissioners I've ever come in contact with.
How many have you been around for?
I've been doing this for 35 years.
Yeah,
so not always in New York, but I have been around a lot of commissioners and in other states as well. He has been extremely accessible, and I would go so far as to say courageous. He has faced down some very stiff opposition, including a vote of no confidence by the New York State United Teachers, a vote of no confidence in the program of the Common Core, which has been his signature piece.
Which you guys are for.
Which we are for. And I would tell you that I truly believe that he is doing an outstanding job.
Obviously, you have to negotiate with unions, as each school board does. But do you find that there is an increasing sense of militancy? They kicked out our friend Richard Iannuzzi, head of the New York State Teachers Union. Michael Mulgrew, he's the guy in New York City. He looks like he has blood in his eye. Are you finding that the union movement is becoming more militant that you have to deal with?
I think so. I think they're afraid of the changes that are coming their way. They're looking down the pike and realizing that change is occurring. Education reforms are taking place.
You're making it easier, for example, to fire people.
We don't have that right quite yet, and we're not seeking to make it easier to fire people. And that, I don't think, is fundamentally the biggest problem. I think they're looking at the fact that their careers are ones now that they're being held to a higher degree of accountability, to a higher standard of performance.
Well, but obviously
changes are taking place. Technology is taking away some of these jobs.
But obviously the other side to that is if you're holding them to a standard and if you're looking for accountability and you're not getting it, then the obvious answer is goodbye, isn't it?
It's not that easy.
No, it's not easy.
It's not easy.
But is it easier?
I've not sensed that. In fact, there's been some really difficult times when we have argued for the fact that we have this situation. I'll give you one example. Last in, first out.
Sure.
Whereby you have people who have been hired in recently.
And they're the first ones who have to get
And when
excess.
We have layoffs and excess decisions to
but
make.
But you might have somebody who's been around for a long time who's no good. And that becomes harder to get rid of.
Well, I'm not even thinking about quality as much as to the ability. We need to provide a up-to-date, modern, high-quality, high-performance educational program for these kids. And there are going to be some people who have a skill set that we want, but they might not be the people who have been around the longest.
Sure.
And
it's like a doctor. The doctor comes from the hospital. He knows all the new procedures.
Right.
The guy who's been around for 1,000 years may still be important and may have better instincts.
That's right. Now, I don't want this to be portrayed as I somehow do not honor experience.
Sure.
I do. And I think that the teachers who have a significant amount of experience, here I am sitting here with my 35 years in this business.
Yeah.
I better honor it, right? I get it. And I don't want to just say out with the old, in with the new. Don't get me wrong. But we don't have any flexibility in that regard. And that's been difficult.
So is the new militancy on the part of the unions a pain in the you-know-what for the school boards who have to deal with the more militant teachers now?
Not as much as you might think. I do know that there are some difficult times when negotiations are tough, when we're seeking concessions and we're not able to get those concessions, when we're squeezed because of costs and we're not able to do anything but lay people off and cut programs because we can't.
But you can always point at the governor and their people and say they made us do it. In the old days, you were out there hanging out all alone. Now you have a lot of rational reasons why you have to do what you have to do.
I agree with that, and it is causing us to make some very, very difficult decisions. But I would tell you that we're all going into these well aware of how the recession is continuing to linger among school districts and public sector budgets. And I will tell you that we are doing some things pretty dramatically in cutting our costs, sharing services, consolidating programs. And the teachers' unions, they see what's happening.
And what's the mood of your members, the guys in the green pants who come to school board meetings?
In the green pants?
Well, you know, they got, okay, so
hadn't heard that one before.
So what's their mood? Are they getting more militant? Are they getting their backs up more?
I do think that they're feeling a little more heat. And there are people who have resisted some of the things that school board members are attempting to do as far as making some education reforms, some policy changes, introducing and supporting the Common Core. They're hearing that pretty directly from those who typically are outspoken in opposition to change. The people who support it are oftentimes the silent majority who you won't see at school board meetings and typically are not going to hear much from. It'll be those vocal opponents who come out. And yes, we are feeling that. But I have to tell you, I've been very, very impressed with the school board members that I've been working with who have said, you know, we got to do what's right for kids.
Do you ever have a chance to talk to the governor?
I do not.
Why not?
Well, I do speak with his staff. He has got a very well-oiled, well-defined pecking order. And there is a couple people who are within his Deputy Secretary for Education, the gentleman who I speak with regularly. Yeah. And then I can get to people such as his secretary, his right-hand person. Larry Schwartz, yes, I've spoken to him.
Tough guy.
Yes, he is.
Reputation for, you know, taking no prisoners.
Yeah. He does, but also, you know, if you need an ally and he's with you, he's a good one.
There is that. Well, we love talking to you, Tim, and I hope I haven't said anything that affected you negatively, because we do love you, and we've known you for a long time. Our guest has been Tim Creamer. It looks like it's Kremer, but we all know it's Creamer, Executive Director of the New York State School Boards Association. Tim, as always, just been a joy having you here, and thanks so much for doing it.
Thank you, Alan.
Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.